So we're going to pick it up where we left off. Yesterday we talked about the women and their extraordinary contribution. And today we're going to talk about the leaders of the Jewish people, the leadership and their underperformance. So we're in chapter 35, verse 27. The Hanasiim. A Nasi literally translates in English today as a president. It's a leader of a particular group. So we know there were 12 tribes, and the tribes had presidents, or leaders, princes. And the princes of these tribes, they were kind of like Torah leaders, weren't political leaders necessarily. They were tasked with the responsibility of helping the Jewish people do what they were supposed to do as Jewish people. So you would think, if righteous people who are tasked with helping the Jewish people be Jewish people, do what Hashem wants, they probably would have done a really good job of leading by example. Well, so we have to think again. Because in this particular instance, it says, V'hanesiim heviu es anshe hashoyim. The Nesiim, the princes, the leaders, they brought the onyx stones. This refers to the two black stones, the onyx stones that were on the shoulders or epaulets of the Kohen Gadol. And the names of the Jewish people, of the tribes of Israel, were inscribed, engraved on them. V'yas avnei hamiluyim, and the stones that filled the choshen, the breastplate, they called avnei miluyim because there were these gold settings that were empty and they had to be filled, and the stones filled them. So the avnei miluyim, the stones that filled the gold settings on the breastplate, these precious gems were brought by the Nesiim as well.
So all this is happening in the Midbar.
All this is happening in the Midbar, that is correct.
Where did they find all this stuff?
Where did they find all this stuff? You remember that they took a lot of wealth from the Egyptians, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, there's some very special items that the Egyptians had.
People had all kinds of special items. I mean, the Egyptians came with gem-studded chariots. But your question is a good one. It's so good that there is this interpretation of Nesiim, not as princes, but as clouds. And it says that the clouds, they rain down some gemstones. And according to one opinion, it came with the manna. So there is, I mean, this is not Pshuta Shel Mikra, but there is like an issue, the question, where did they get these stones from? So there is such a concept. In fact, it's a Gemara, the Seches Yuma, on page 75. The Gemara says that when the man would fall, there would be precious gems falling as well. So you picked up man crystals to eat, and maybe you picked up a few diamonds as well. You say halavai, but don't be so sure. The Jewish people didn't do so well with wealth the first time around. Mm. They built a golden calf. So this time they're doing a little bit better. The Kli Yakar has a very interesting take on that whole business. He says that when you give tzedakah, he says, then the rains aren't held back. It's not exactly something we worry about in Canada. Droughts are not a concern. We have too much of a lot of things, including snow and rain. There's no drought here. But in a dry place, they worry about droughts. And they worry about things becoming too brittle. Like in California, there's worried always about brush fires. But in Eretz Yisrael, where the rivers are nothing to speak of, they don't have like a Mississippi or a Danube in Israel. The Jordan River is like a stream compared to other places. How do they have the ability to farm? It rains. What if it doesn't rain? You're in big trouble. This can cause drought, and drought causes famine, and famine causes economic collapse. We know from the Torah, from the beginning of the narratives of the Jewish people, before we were a people, that was twice we read of massive famine, in the time of Avraham Avinu, and then of course in the time of Yaakov. Even Yitzchak, there was a little bit of a famine going on. So it's not a simple thing. And because of this, the Kli Yakar says, the message here is that when people give tzedakah, then the clouds come along. And see him have you. The clouds will bring what they have to bring as long as there's generosity. And over here, it says the clouds gave rain and the clouds gave blessing and the blessing came in the form of these gemstones. But anyway, I wasn't going to talk about that, but since you mentioned it, right? Yes, there was. There's a bit of a question where that comes from.
Tzedakah tatzil mimavet.
Tzedakah tatzil mimavet, that's right. There was such a concept. Yeah, yeah. But at any rate, on a level of Pshuta Shel Mikra, that's not what we say. Where the Jewish people got enormous amounts of lumber from, and a particular kind of lumber of all things, that indeed Rashi feels compelled to share with you a Midrashic interpretation, that it came from somewhere, they had to plant it, they had to prepare it. How would they have such an enormous volume of lumber to build a Mishkan? But to have a handful of gemstones, it's not inconceivable. It's not such a big question. And why would they have it of all people? So the Ibn Ezra says very simple. There was a kind of classes of the Jewish people. The Nesiim were the nobility. So when they plundered the booty of Kriyas Yamsuf, who do you think got the top? The top echelons got the top. It's not even a question of corruption. It's just there was certain societal classes. And they were respected. So, okay, oh, this is for a Nasi. This chariot goes to a Nasi. So they couldn't take chariots with them. The chariots they left, but they removed gold, silver, ornamentations. So there was a few onyx stones, there was a couple of rubies, some gems, took these things.
But the concept of the Nesiim, it's just now that we're talking about, the Torah is talking about it. So those Nesiim didn't have any role while the Jewish people was in Egypt.
It's not so simple to say they didn't have a role. The Egyptians appointed some kind of leadership because the Egyptians didn't want to police the Jewish people. They said, self-police yourself. I'll use an awful name, which we
Kapo.
Yeah, we tremble to say that name. There were like kapos, but see, Yimach Shemam, the Nazis, and they're all the willing executioners, they had let the Jews police the ghettos. And many of these kapos were terrible people, right? To save their own skin, they harmed everybody. But there were some decent people who were thrust into roles that they didn't want to be in, and they didn't know what to do. And in Mitzrayim, we hear specifically that these Nesiim, they were trying to, the Egyptians forced them to harm the Jewish people. And they said, beat them and force them. And if you don't do that, we'll beat you. And they did get beaten. They got beaten on behalf of the people. They wouldn't beat the people. They sustained the injuries instead of giving the injuries. And because of this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, that's why they merit to become Nesiim. That was a real leader, actually. They were real leaders. A real leader takes the beating, doesn't pass it on. Certainly doesn't initiate. So they had many qualities, these people. They're not to be dismissed. They were leaders in Mitzrayim because they really, truly cared about the people. And they were willing to suffer on behalf of the people. They did everything they possibly could to make the people's lives easier. And these Nesiim eventually move into a position of prominence and leadership. Any anthropology will have leaders. Leaders always emerge. There are people with leadership qualities. They're always going to be leaders in a group. You know, to use antiquated phraseology, there's always going to be chiefs and Indians. It's always going to be like that. And there's always going to be detractors, there's always going to be rebels. People don't want to lead, but they want to just snipe at the leader. That's how it is. It's always going to be that way.
So it is today.
Huh?
So it is today.
Nothing changes. Human nature is human nature. Human anthropology is basically the same story. So anyway, that's what these Nesiim brought. That's what they brought. Rashbam says, why did the Nesiim bring these things? Because the names of the tribes of the Jewish people were engraved on these stones. And because of that, the Nesiim felt a special affinity with these stones. These stones would represent their tribes, so they wanted to be the ones to bring it. Rabbeinu Bechaya says that the idea of a Nasi, a leader, is something that's fraught. Because when a person is in a position of leadership, it's easy for it to get to their heads. And it's easy for them to become arrogant, which is a terrible midah, right? Chas v'shalom. It's the worst thing a leader could be. So why was there a cheshen? One of the cheshens on the heart, because arrogance is in the heart. It's called gavas halev, high-hearted. Person feels stout-hearted. So since the breastplate was on the heart, on the chest, on the heart, so what that would do is that would be mechaper and gavas halev. That would, so to speak, atone for any kind of inappropriate arrogance or self-importance. And so the Nesiim felt, this is the mechanism that we need to make sure is in place. They knew this was a special weakness they would have, so therefore they went out of their way. They said, we need to bring those gemstones. This will ensure that in fact we remain on the straight and narrow. So that was the idea of the Nesiim bringing these things. So these are all, you know, very nice interpretations, but Rashi is more bothered by something else, which we haven't talked about yet. Rashi is bothered by a basic question. When do leaders typically get involved? In the beginning. We call this in English leading by example. Right? You lead by example. You cannot expect other people to do things if you yourself never want to roll your hands up, your sleeves up, never get your hands dirty. It's not going to work. So here, Vanesiim Heviu, Rashi points out that they only came at the end. After it says that the nation brought, the men brought, and the woman brought, and the woman brought better than the men. And after we talk about the different genders and how they brought and who excelled at what, then we say in verse 27, Vanesiim Heviu. So the Rashi quotes now the words of our sages, and he says, Omer Rabbi Nosson, Rabbi Nosson taught, Ma ro nesiim lehisnadev b'chanukas ha-mishkan t'chila. Why is it that when it came to the consecration of the Mishkan, the nesiim lined up first? They were the first ones to bring the offerings. However, b'melechas ha-mishkan, when it came to building the Mishkan, lehisnadev b'chila, they did not bring in the beginning. Ela. So Rashi says this was the thesis, this was their idea. Kach amru nesiim, this is what the nesiim said. Let the community, the congregation, the public bring whatever it'll bring. Let the public donate, let the public commit, that's fine. And then what's left over, we'll be the matching donors. They'll give, we'll match. We'll finish it off. What happened? In the end, the public came forward with an incredible profusion of generosity. And they finished everything. Shenemar, we know this because later on in chapter 36, it's going to say, Bahamalachim Haisa Dayam, the work was sufficient. Chapter 36 and verse 7. Now you take a look on the next page. It says, in verse 6 says, Vayitzav Moshe. Moshe said, Vayaviru kol b'machane. He sent a message out. In modern terminology, he sent out a tweet, and he said, okay, enough guys, stop bringing. And says, Vayikol Yomahavi, people stop bringing. Why? Because they were told to stop bringing. Why did they tell, why were they told to stop bringing? Because Hamalacha, he said, Dayim Lachol Hamalacha. Because whatever they brought was sufficient. It was Lasis Oysa to make whatever they had to make, V'hoyser, and even more so. That's how the third reading concludes. So Rashi here says, they saw everything was brought. So what did they bring? So they brought the onyx stones to participate, at least in the big dekun, at least in the Kohanic raiments. Therefore, when it came to the consecration, the inauguration of the Mishkan, they came along right in the beginning. Rashi says, and because they behaved in a manner that seemed to speak of laziness, mitchila in the beginning, nechsru eis mishmoisam, that's why the word nesiim here is misspelled, or spelled minus letters, yud would typically be, it says v'ha nesiim ksiv, the yud is missing. So this is Rashi quoting the Sifri and the Medrash Rabba. Now, that's a silly question. The nesiim here, they hit it out of the park, they hit a home run, or they struck out here? Seems like they struck out, yeah? Seems like they struck out.
They run the matching campaign.
Okay, well, what did you say?
Unless they run say they wanted to let the people do their thing.
That's clearly what they wanted to do. They wanted to let the people do it.
They're suppressing their own desire to let the people do a good job? Unless you're going
to
say that.
They seem to have done that. That's what they said.
Either way.
Right? So how, it seems like Rashi's efficient is atzl.
Yeah.
Laziness is not a virtue.
Yeah, exactly.
The nesiim seem to have fallen short here, right? So let's take a look and see how the Rebbe analyzes this Rashi. This is going to be an amazing journey, but a little journey though. And the reason it's going to be an amazing little journey is because the Rebbe's going to rotate its Rashi on its head. It's going to be the exact opposite of the way you typically learn this. Page Shin Ayin Hei on the bottom. So here in the Bureau book, in the 17th entry for Parshas Vayakel, we have the Pasuk, right? 35, 27. And we have the excerpt of the words of Rashi. So the Rebbe says, Bahashkafa Rishayna, at first glance, it seems that Rashi addresses the behavior of the Nesiim, the behavior of the leaders, in a way which is, they're inappropriate. He's bishlila muchletas. He's kind of ruling out that this is not good behavior. they were lazy. They didn't do what they had to do. It's not appropriate. Min haroi, the right and appropriate thing would have been, she'ein yakdimu leishtatev benidus ha-mishkan. A leader should lead. They should have come first. Achem esatzlo, but they were lazy. Himtino, they waited. They waited until the public, let's see what the public does. Until the public brought and brought, until they brought so much, they didn't need anymore. There was nothing left for them to do. And because of this laziness, the Nesiim lost a letter from the name. Their name, when the Torah describes Nesiim, it's minus the Yud. That's the simple reason. So the Rebbe says, L'fi havanazu, from this simple understanding, this is the classic or typical understanding of Rashi and the failure of leadership. The leaderships are MIA. Nobody knew where they were. The Rebbe says, if that's the case, let me ask you a couple of questions. Question one. When you see something which is an anomaly, something unusual, what might you do if you wanted to understand why the anomaly is happening? What would you do? You might ask. You say, what's going on here? This doesn't seem to be right. And when you saw something that seems to make sense, seems to jibe with your understanding of things, would you ask any questions? No. How does Rashi open? He says, Ma ro nesim lisnadav b'chanukas ha-mishkan t'chila. Why, when it came to the inauguration of the Mishkan, did the Nesiim, did the leaders present themselves first? Why did they present themselves first? One second. What is the assumption? Leaders should come as the caboose at the end, or that leaders should lead and be there in the beginning? What's the assumption? Should be there in the beginning. So what kind of question is this? When the leaders behave like leaders, when they brought that which was appropriate, at the timing that was appropriate, front, right, and center, Rashi says, hey, Maro Nesiim, why did they come right away? Is that the question? The question isn't why they came right in the beginning, why they got it right the second time. The question was why they got it wrong the first time. Hareyatmiya, the thing that should make us wonder, the thing that should make us ask the question, is not why they came first at the inauguration, but rather why, when it came to the donations, Icharu lehishtatef b'nesiyas b'nidvus ha-mishkan. Why were they late? Why were they tarry? Why did they come at the end? In other words, the question is why they came at the end, not why they came at the beginning. And yet, when Rashi asked the question, the opening volley of the question is, he asked the questions, I don't understand, says, leadership. Where was leadership? Why did they come at the beginning? One second. Why did they come at the beginning? That's not a question. That's what leaders do. Your question was why they came at the end, not why they came at the beginning. Coming at the end seems to be a deficiency. Why is the question posed? Why did they come at the beginning? Question two. So, how is it possible that the Torah gives us a negative report about the Nesiim, and that remains for posterity? We actually know the names of these people, and we talk about the Jewish leadership or the failure of Jewish leadership in antiquity. They failed. The leaders didn't do the right thing. And the reason was laziness. That's awful. Lazy leaders. Harei, the Rebbe says, Afilu b'gnuz behema t'mei l'dibra ha-kosav. The Torah is so careful with every word it uses. The Gemara in Bava Basra spends time in this in Moreh Pesachim. Even when it comes to a non-kosher animal, the Torah won't spell it out. Habehema hatmeya. It says habehema asher einenu tahira, using three additional words, because it doesn't want to say the word tameya, impure, when it's not necessary. It says the animal who isn't, rather than the animal who's impure. Tamei is not impure. Tamei is a negative word. The Rebbe used to speak like this. The Rebbe would never say anything negative. Everything was always like, whatever, the thing that's missing, the thing that's going to be completed, the situation that's going to work itself out, the circumstances from which Hashem is going to save us. He never, it's like unbelievable. You listen carefully to Rebbe's words. I never heard anybody else in the world take that Gemara so literally. They always would speak in a positive way. So the question becomes then, the Torah tells us to be so positive, and it goes out of its way to present everybody in the best light possible. So why would it highlight the failure of the leadership here? So if you say, didn't highlight it, we figured it out by ourselves. But Rashi says, no, the Torah misspelled the Nesiim. The Torah removed the Yud from their name as if to broadcast their deficiency. They're not spelled fully. You know why? Because they fell short. That's why. Why would the Torah broadcast that? And therefore, the Rebbe suggested that we're all learning Rashi wrong. That the way people have typically learned this Rashi for hundreds of years is simply incorrect. The Rebbe suggests that the leaders did not do the wrong thing. Al Yisoid Shaila Seilu, based on these questions, the Rebbe says, it's not Gusim Shal Hanasim Lo Yehoisim Mitaych Atzlos Gredo. They weren't just lazy. Adarabba. The Nesiim did what they did because they were leaders. They came late because they were leaders? They didn't lead because they were leaders? How can that be? The Rebbe says, the responsibility, the mandate of Jewish leadership, like leaders for the Jewish people, the leader does not worry about himself. Who does the leader worry about? About the people. Elullah Haftiach, what does the leader have to be concerned with? To be certain, Toivas Hatzibur, the welfare of the public. Anason Lachar Yusam, which is given over to their responsibility. Ulidek, their job is to be concerned with Shatzibur Yases Anidrish Mimenu. Will the people measure up? And the question a leader has to ask himself is, how do I get them to measure up? Ubin Yaneinu, and here with regard to our set of circumstances, Hanesiim lo yizdarzu lahavias nidvasim lemleches hamishkan. The Nesiim didn't come along and bring the donations. Do you know why? Mishum shem savru, they thought shalacholarei shaleim lahavtiach shatzibur yishtatef karoi. That the first responsibility, that the first concern is making sure that everybody else will behave generously. They didn't know what would happen. In fact, nobody knew what's going to happen. The last time they came running to bring their gold, they all brought golden calves. And they built a golden calf. It was a disaster. That didn't go well. And the woman, they didn't bring at all. And so Moshe doesn't know what's going to happen. But get Moshe. The Nesiim didn't know what was going to happen. They were all deeply concerned. What do we do? How is this going to go? How do we make sure that the people are going to pony up and do what's expected of them? So they kind of threw it into the hands of the public. They said, no. No. We're waiting for you, because they thought the public's going to say, oh, let the rich people give. Let the leaders give. We'll follow along. Let them show us first. And the Nesiim were, by and large, the wealthier people. So when the wealthy people will give, the big knockers will get involved, we'll come along at the end. We'll bring our copper pennies. We'll come at the end, we'll come and make our little contribution. So that's what the Nesiim were worried about. And Zehi Eifrei, this is the meaning of what Rashi himself says, quoting our sages. Yisnadvu tzibur mashi yisnadvu. Doesn't mean, let them bring whatever they'll bring. It means, let them get involved. We want them to get involved. Because that's our job as leaders. L'chol reish, first and foremost, michev aseinu la'avtiach es hishtatfus eshel tzibur. Our first concern is ensuring that they, the public, will do what is necessary. If something will be missing, that's not a problem. We expect it to be a shortfall, and we'll be there for the shortfall. No worries. They weren't trying to avoid participation, but they said, we want everybody else to get involved first. And this is the question then. So in that case, if that was the approach of the Nesiim, if they had this strong emphasis on pedagogy and trying to educate the public, so then why let them came to the Chanukah on Mishkan, did they come first? If there were fake leaders worry about themselves, I understand why they came into Mishkan first. They said, it's our opportunity. We're going to shine now. But if they weren't worried about themselves, these are real leaders. If they were real leaders, then how come when it came to Chanukah HaMizbeach, they lined up first and said, okay, we're first. They should have been last then. That's why Rashi opens with a question. The question is not why they came last here. The question is why they came first there. And Rashi says, I'll tell you why. Because last time they said, let the community get involved. Let the public do. And then what happened? The Nesiim came along and said, they finished everything. We underestimated our public. They hit a home run, a grand slam. There's nothing left. Lekaches nadvu b'mizbeach tchila. Therefore, they said, okay, so they don't need our pedagogy. They're good. They understand when it comes to being generous and giving to Hashem, they're right on the money. And therefore, la'achar eshenoicha nesiim l'das. Once the leadership was now in the know, they knew shenidvas hatzibur hispiku l'chol tzorach ha'mishkan. They knew that what the public had brought was sufficient. In fact, they left them really and truly nothing to bring. You know, the famous question is asked, if left nothing to bring, had they bring the onyx stones? Had they bring the gemstones? So the Rebbe once answered, very simple. The truth is there was enough money to purchase it. But they brought it, but they didn't need it anymore. If the coffers are full, the coffers are full. You're missing something, you buy it. Could be they didn't get all the other materials. Maybe they were missing some gold, maybe missing some something, so they would buy it. Hey, Mesiku Mikach, they drew the conclusion from this. They said, I think we made a mistake. So how can we make a mistake? Why? Because clearly we miscalculated. Our gamble was they would never bring everything necessary, and we would have to kind of nudge them along, give them a little push, try to inspire them, say, hey, come on guys, let's go. Whip up the enthusiasm. But instead they all came and they gave with such extraordinary generosity. Was nothing left. Then the Nesiim said, in that case, since we miscalculated, since we misjudged the people, since we assumed that we would have to push them along, but instead, in fact, they did everything on their own, so now we have to make up for this. That's when they said, okay, fine. So now we have to lead by example. It's a different kind of leadership. So what really happened there? The Rebbe gives us now a fascinating perspective on two modes of leadership. The Nesiim didn't really strike out. It's just there's two approaches to a circumstance.
So the missing letter is because of the miscalculation?
Listen to this. Shikol daitem shal anasim. Ultimately, there was a deficiency. The missing letter is because of a deficiency, but it's not what everybody thinks it is. It wasn't a gross deficiency. It was a subtle, nuanced deficiency. The calculation that the Nesiim made is, l'chol reish mitafkidom laftiach, the first responsibility is pedagogical. We have to educate the public. We have to make sure that the public will do its job. And after the public will do its job, so, and we'll take care of whatever's missing. We'll cover the shortfall. However, there is something more important sometimes than pedagogy. What could be more important than education?
Example
is education. What could be, you have a circumstance, and what could be more important than education?
More important than education.
I'll give you an example. The first educator that we read of in the Torah is Avraham Avinu. Mm-hmm. Who is he trying to educate? His son Yishmael. By the way, he didn't do so good. In the end, it turned out okay. In between, he had a hiatus. How do we know that Avraham Avinu tried to get Yishmael involved in what he did? Because it says that he sent Yishmael off to participate in the hospitality. Right? So how do you educate children?
Involve them.
Not only by example. Avraham could show by example. Here he is, he had surgery 3 days ago. But then again, Yishmael also had surgery. He didn't just show him by example, he got him involved. It's a very, very important lesson. You don't only lead by example, you lead by engaging. Mm-hmm. And that was important. But let me reframe this. What if somebody was starving? Somebody has a need, an acute need. He needs triage now. You say, I'm sorry, you have to suffer a little longer. I have a little bit of education to deal with now. So a guy comes in bleeding, and you say to your child, patch him up. You're, of course, an emerge doctor. You know exactly what you're doing. But your child now is learning first aid. Patch him up. Dad, are you serious? Mom, patch him up. You're an emerge doctor. Patch him up. I know you did first aid course. You took first aid. Patch him up. So the kid starts to patch up, and is bleeding from all his eye. And the kid and the parent says, after my child finishes patching up, I'll fix it up. I'll fix the tourniquet, I'll fix the bandages. But I want my child to get involved. Is something wrong with this picture?
Yeah.
What's wrong with this picture? This is not a teaching moment. This is a saving moment. There are times to teach and times to get the job done. And when it's time to get the job done, then it's not a time to muster pedagogical ability. Now is not the time to say, okay, how do I convey something, how do I teach? Then you teach by example, and by example only. Now is not the time to engage. What was the most important thing to do? build a Mishkan was more important than anything else. You can educate later. Now we have to build a Mishkan because the Mishkan is where Hashem is going to live, and this is going to be the forgiveness of Hashem. The people were so intensely committed to this, Moshe Rabbeinu was concerned they would violate Shabbos in order to do this. That's why we had to begin the campaign saying Shabbos, Shabbat comes first, because they thought even Shabbat would be overridden. That was their failure. The failure was they were engaged in pedagogy when they should have been engaged in triage. There's a teaching moments, and teaching moments are important. And every moment could be a teaching moment. But sometimes it's a teaching moment by getting others engaged. And sometimes the teaching moment is, there's simply no time. Get the job done. So the Nesi'im did drop the ball. Where they dropped the ball? In assuming that now is time to teach, instead of understanding now is time to get the job done. And that's the rest of the story. A lot of food for thought. Mm-hmm.